What's up, guys? Welcome to the Flawed Dad's Guide to Parenting, the podcast all about the average flawed dad learning to be a better parent. Today, we wanted to talk about where the best place to raise your children is. Is it the city, the suburbs, or out in the country or more rural locations? Warren shares with us his experiences and desires about moving to a smaller community, while I look into the information out there and share statistics about things to consider about where you move to. Stick around and listen as two flawed dads try not to screw up their kids too bad. Hey, Warren.
Hey, Graham. How you doing?
Not bad. We're going to talk a little bit about your weekend's activities. I'm excited about this one.
Sounds good. Yeah, it was a busy weekend doing some house hunting.
Yeah, good on you. It's always a life-changing thing.
It is. It's one of the most stressful decisions you can make. I think I was telling you earlier, adulting sucks. Like, it's stressful making these kinds of decisions because you know the impact it's going to have on your kids.
Yeah, and what you're talking about is pretty colossal. So why don't you go through what your thought process is. It's not just a typical house move. It's something a whole lot more.
Yeah, so we're looking at moving to a more, we'll call it a semi-rural sort of community. Having moved from in the city to out to where we live now, which I guess you could call a town. I mean, it's the city of Delta, but I guess the village or town of Tawasin. But moving out to a significantly more, you know, semi-rural type of location where we're on an acre or more of land and a greater distance from pretty much all the types of services that you would want or need. But excited about it. Excited to make that move. I have always wanted to raise my family in that type of an environment, having grown up in the city. You know, give the kids that experience of country living, that sort of thing. But I know that this is something that a few people in my life have contested with regards to the rationale behind it and the benefits of this move for both Rachel and I and the kids.
Yes, exactly. And I am one of those, admittedly.
Right. So why don't we dive in and you can give me a bit of, because I know you've done a huge amount of research on this. I don't know if it's if in effort to try to convince me not to do this, or if it's out of pure interest in the topic. Or maybe a combination of the two.
I would say it's a combination of the two. So today's ultimate topic, I think, is because of what you're planning on doing, it just always naturally spurs the question of, well, what is the data? Or is there research out there for saying what the difference is versus living in a city versus living in the suburbs versus living in more country sort of living, et cetera?
Yeah.
And so that's where we wanted to, I thought, may as well go into that roach, that broach topic.
Topic, broach that topic.
Broach that, yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
And go through that. And if the byproduct is potentially convincing you not to move because of the data supports that, well, hey. Well, all the better for me, since you'll be potentially closer. So, double bonus for everyone.
Yeah. So I have not done, you know, as deep a research on why we should do this. My research is more anecdotal in nature, but you know, I'll give you a bit of the reasons why we were intending on making the move in the first place.
Yep.
And then you can give me the multitude of competing arguments that you have written down here.
I'm not going to be against all of it. There are definitely some advantages. Yeah. There's no question about it. I think like most things, it seems like the answer is always the "it depends" answer.
Yeah.
And that's the big if.
Well, that's exactly why adulting sucks.
It does.
Because it really is a series of "it depends" type of questions.
And you don't know it's not a quick answer. Like you know, you have a website or something like that and you change a color and you're like, oh, did this help over the next day or so? No? Okay, well, I better switch back.
Yeah.
It's not instantaneous analytical stuff. It's
long-term,
like, oh, well, that wasn't a good idea, I guess, 3 years in.
And that's definitely the challenge with something like a move like this, is you don't have data analytics on a minute-by-minute basis to determine whether this is the right move or not, even after you've made it. So here's the thing. Obviously, we have some challenges in our household between, you know, an oldest child who has ADHD, dyslexia, dyscalculia, dysgraphia, a middle child who is dealing with suicidal thoughts and dyslexia,
mm-hmm.
and then a youngest child who in all likelihood will also fall somewhere within learning disabilities and that sort of thing.
Right.
The school system here, I don't want to say it's failed the girls, but it's not working properly. And so the oldest, you know, we're having to commute an hour across the city each way in order to take her to a school that specializes in being able to help her with these sorts of issues. And in all likelihood, the middle one would have to go to that school too.
Which has
helped phenomenally.
A lot of times.
I give unbelievable credit to Kenneth Gordon School for what they have done for her. Like, just, I'm plugging you guys here if any of you are listening from Kenneth Gordon. It is an incredible school that has done an incredible job. But
not 100%.
Not 100%, but at the same time, it is incredibly expensive.
Yes.
Right? It is
a you challenge. Expect results if
yes.
you're...
Yes. Yeah. And given that it's not just one child of ours that has these issues, in order to do this,
mm-hmm.
like, to put two kids through would eat up an entire wage,
yeah.
like household wage. It's a huge undertaking, right? Now, putting your kids first is fantastic, all that kind of stuff, but, you know, that gets to the point where it's not possible to do. So, you know, we wanted to make sure that they're getting the right education and also lifestyle. You know, an hour drive each way is really exhausting on everybody involved.
Yes.
Right. Through the city, right? We're going to the opposite corner of the city, and it's really hard on us. It's particularly hard on Rachel. And so going somewhere where we have access to a school of that type of caliber at a significantly reduced price in a community where we can have more space and, you know, have a nice house, that sort of stuff is really attractive to us. In addition, I think when you move out of the city, and again, this is anecdotal, there is significantly less pressure on you. And so a few of these articles that I was looking at, you know, they talk about the beauty of simplicity, and that having less choices to make actually makes life more enjoyable, because right. You don't have a choice drain on your mental capacity. And I think that's certainly true. And, you know, the area that we're looking in is very relaxed. You know, you get to it and you immediately feel like this weight has come off your shoulders, right?
Now that's choice drain that you're speaking about. That's probably more for adults, right? I mean,
yeah,
yes. My belief is the choices involved for anything even below 19 or 18 is like, you know, where are we going to go for dinner? Like, this is a lot of pressure here.
Yeah.
There's not any massive changes or thought process for that. And the earlier you get, even less, you know, critical decisions that have to be made.
Yeah.
It's tough. I mean, you know, just from your perspective as well, it's to try and reduce that commute. There's cost of living issues maybe, but just things are more expensive in the more mm-hmm. urban areas, and there's a lot of factors involved.
We moved out of the city to move to where we are now, and in order to go back to that, we would have to move back into the city essentially,
right.
And that's the opposite. We'd have to downsize in space. You know, we would be going down to a third of the space that we live in right now with five of us and the dog.
Yeah.
Which is challenging to think of in the first place. But it's also, you know, urban living and urban in the city that we live in comes with a lot of potential dangers, right? We have a city that has some of the highest prevalence of drug usage and overdoses and those sorts of things. We've got a rising amount of gang crime taking place. I mean, the area of the city we'd be moving to is not, it doesn't have as much of that as some other areas of the city, but it still takes place.
Right.
You know, and there are just so many goddamn people. Like it can be really challenging and irritating to be around that many people. I mean, I'm an
extrovert.
Especially
if you're coming from a place that is a little smaller, mm-hmm. I guess, in nature.
Yeah.
I would imagine that's, you're moving from a place that's big to a place that's smaller. You really notice it on the more probably positive side overall.
Like, yeah.
Oh, this is a lot less people. This is more social typically.
Yeah.
But then going the other way, you're like, well, goddamn.
And I enjoy being social. But I would say that I am a forced extrovert. I would say I'm a natural introvert. Like I really need to step away and have my own time and peace. And I don't think that you find that living in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And my belief is that the girls likely inherited that from me as well.
Right.
And that being around that many people in this much congestion and traffic and noise and all these sorts of things contributes to their anxiety. And so anecdotally, my belief is that a move to something more semi-rural is going to help them to address those sorts of things.
There's no question, just from listening to all this as well. I mean, the biggest struggle is the schooling side of it. There's absolutely no ifs, ands, or buts about that. Is what is the best solution there? And it's sort of like a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation almost. Like there's no
right answer for us.
Yeah, it's a tough pickle for sure. And we won't necessarily go into it entirely at this point in time because it's sort of off topic a little bit, but at the cost level wise, it's almost the consideration of homeschooling potentially. And
yeah.
What happens there is that is somewhere in the table of choice wise.
Yes. We have considered that, but we'd have to bring down our cost of living substantially. So we'd have to, and we could not do that in the city.
Right.
You know, if we moved out to the country, you know, Rachel, who is a trained early childhood educator and that sort of stuff, could stop working and do that. But our cost of living being in this city in particular, you know, the second most expensive city in the world, it's just not economically feasible to have a single person working.
Okay, so yeah, I guess, as you said, it may be a little bit more anecdotal. You feel mm-hmm. like...
all of these things are feelings.
Yeah.
Which my therapist says I'm supposed to have.
Have you, with the articles that you have come across at all, mm-hmm. have you noticed anything other than feelings or interpretations at all? From a, I guess, more data perspective?
Well, not so much from a data perspective. I guess most of it, again, would still be anecdotal. Like, you know, the idea of safety in a smaller community, that people feel comfortable leaving their doors unlocked and you know, they don't worry about their car being stolen because people know each other. You don't necessarily get the same kind of transients or other issues. I imagine that's very much based on what type of town you or small community you move into. Traffic, you know, commuting is certainly a big one. Not having to do an hour commute through city traffic will make a huge difference. You know, we can live within a 4-minute drive from from the school that the kids are going to, which is a big one.
Yeah.
You know, sense of community. Granted, I have that here because we're in a smaller town, kind of on the edge of the city. But you know, it's still, you know, we're 25,000 people here. Yeah. It's not a close-knit community.
Right.
Whereas in a more semi-rural or rural area, I think you definitely get that stronger sense of community, everybody leaning on each other, you're all going to the same places, you know, you've got one local pub or you know, two or three of them.
As long as you like
those people. Yeah. And
which is, you know,
Rachel and I were talking about this over the weekend and saying, you know, one of the challenges that comes with being in a smaller community is that everybody knows your business.
Right.
Right. That if something goes wrong, you have nowhere to run. You can't just go to another community and build another group of friends. Like, it's, if there's a problem, it's a problem for everybody.
Right.
It
seems like to me, just from this more anecdotally at this point, the decision going just overarching, the decision to move between city living or suburbs or we'll call it country living.
Sure.
Is it from a child rearing perspective only? It's very dependent on the age to me. And I get towards, again, anecdotally. So my wife's parents, they were up in a very small community, that was driven mostly by, aluminum, for instance. Yeah. There's an aluminum plant there, etc. A lot of resources put into building places to make it actually worthwhile, but small place.
Yeah.
And from a...
Yeah, huge boom-bust
community. A baby perspective. Yeah. Okay, the early years, my mother-in-law was absolutely going insane.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, and this is in the baby years, I would say that you want to be in more of a city center, because there's just more access to a whole bunch of different things, like I call it parks or places to go to coffee or library, have little mom baby groups and things like that. Like, there's actually more of an easily accessible social group and more resources available to handle that. Whereas for my mother-in-law, she was like, there's nothing really around. I'm by myself.
Right.
With these kids, and that's it. Like, she was definitely feeling it until after a number of years, she managed to meet one or two people. And because, I mean, if you're not fortunate to be in that same age group of having other people of the same kids' age, then you're kind of on an island. And so for that zone, anecdotally, it seems like it's better to be closer to a more populated area.
Yeah, I would think that in a smaller community, you're also going to have the benefit of, you're not going to have some of the frustrations of living in the city, you know, having to get in the car to go anywhere, right? Or like to go to the coffee shop, sitting in traffic and those sorts of problems, or having to wait in line to do stuff or those sorts of things. You know, you're going to have a community that's also going to bring things to you and be a bit more supportive. You know, I know a lot of moms from our time raising the girls in the city that they felt completely isolated and alone in the city because it's just so busy and everybody's lives are moving on. There is no focus on them as moms.
Interesting. So the exact same scenario, just in a... Yeah.
I think no matter what, you're screwed is the answer to that, right?
Unless, like, you have some type of network.
Unless you have an existing network of people who are having babies at the same time and that sort of...
Now, you can argue it either way. I mean, from a driving perspective,
example.
I mean, if you're in a more rural area, I would argue that you have to drive everywhere.
Yes.
Definitely. Whereas if you're in a city, there are lots of other options that you can do rather than driving potentially. Right, public transit if you wanted to, or maybe taxi, like whatever. Right, whereas if you're in a rural spot, it's like, well, you're driving to someplace.
So we, when we had Navina, we lived downtown Vancouver, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously you lived two doors from us, so I, you know, had some sense of community.
Didn't have kids at the time. Yeah, though.
You did not have kids at the time. And Rachel joined Mommy and Me groups, and so we were very fortunate that she quickly built a community of other moms. I mean, some of the challenges were that some of those other moms were going through significant problems, which, you know, immediately made Rachel kind of take some of those problems on herself. Mm. So it was not a great situation, but so we had urban living, like truly urban living with a young baby. And I would say it was fine. You know, Rachel would pull out the stroller and walk me to work. It was a 1 kilometer walk to the office, that sort of thing. So, and then she'd walk down to meet me when my day was done. It was fantastic. And then when Allie was born, we were living in a very small community outside of Edmonton, right?
Yeah.
And she was born on the side of the highway in the back of an ambulance, right? Like very kind of semi-rural type of story. And she grew up there, and Rach managed to make a little community there. Probably not as much as in the city, because neither of us were from Edmonton.
Right.
Or the, you know, the community that we were in. And probably it was fine as well. So
you didn't know how long you were going to stay there.
Yeah, we had no idea how long we were going to stay, that sort of thing.
That always plays into things too. If you don't think it's your permanent mm-hmm. place, then you kind of like, well, I don't know whether I want to dedicate a whole lot of time to
it. And then Lilia was born in the city again. And so we've done both. And I would say there probably wasn't a huge difference between either in terms of what we got out of it. With Allie, you know, being in that smaller community, there was still services, right? The pools, all those sorts of things. And they were great because there weren't that many people there. So it was never busy. We didn't have to worry about it. You know, running down to the store wasn't a huge ordeal because it didn't take you fighting traffic to get there or anything like that. We were constantly going out and taking them to farms to pick their own vegetables. And like, it was a really unique experience for the kids, being in that area.
Yeah.
And one that I kind of miss. I mean,
for young kids, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that there's a lot more, allure, and there's a lot more interest overall. Like once you get into a laissez-faire teenager, like especially with the internet nowadays, you know, I don't want to do any, like, do you want to go to a farm and feed some corn to a cow or something like that? And be like, no, I don't want to do it now. I'm generalizing. I'm sure there are some people out there, but I feel like once you get into teenage years, it becomes like, well, let me do my own thing and sort of stay by myself type stuff.
Do you think it gives you an opportunity to put on them some responsibilities, though, that they have to follow through on?
If you have that type of, like, as in you're living on a farm or something?
Not necessarily on a farm, but in a more country, like semi-rural type of environment.
Responsibilities in what way?
You know, more intricate chores, right? Riding lawnmower, operating a boat, learning to drive a tractor, all these sorts of things that become skills later on that you wouldn't necessarily get the opportunity to develop living in the city, right? I learned to drive a boat like when I was 6 or 7 years old.
Yeah.
Right. And it's a great skill. It allowed me to that and fishing and that kind of stuff allowed me to pay my way through university as a fishing guide.
Yeah. No question about it. That's an interesting discussion in itself, is that, you know, which is, how long is a piece of string? What's better than the other? I mean, driving is an example. Do the children that have grown up in rural areas, that have driven on their gravel roads every now and then with the car, etc. Mm-hmm. Are they better drivers than individuals who lived in a city, haven't touched a car forever, and then once they turn 16 or whatever the majority is, that they will learn how to drive mm-hmm. and go through lessons then to learn how to drive?
Yeah.
Are after 2 years or some period of time, where are they in terms of
I'd be interested in seeing the data on that. Anecdotally, I would say that kids who learn earlier probably take greater responsibility over it and are more, I don't want to say careful, but cognizant of the risks that can take place with it.
Maybe. I think you could probably argue it either way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. If
you become so relaxed about things that you maybe become a little bit more cavalier. I know how to do this. And I don't know what the data supports. I feel like it's probably just more actual. What it comes down to is just person specific.
Yeah.
My feeling, I don't think there's any argument that in the early years, in the first 2-3 months of driving or something or other, clearly if you've had more experience driving something or doing something before that versus someone that hasn't, well, the skill level is apparent.
Yeah.
But after 2 years or so, or a year even, some type of period, like longer period of time, I don't think there'd be much of a difference.
Yeah.
From like a boat, even driving a boat, et cetera. Like if you just, I've never driven a boat before, but let's say, right? And I get on a boat and spend the next month or two driving a boat. Well, yeah, I have pretty good confidence that I'd be able to sort that out and become a pretty darn good boat driver.
Yeah. I think it's hard. It goes a step beyond those sorts of things, though, and the experiential perspective of growing up in that type of an environment allows or causes kids to respect and appreciate some of the simpler things in life. And I, for a long time, I've been disillusioned with large aspects of modern society and its consumption nature and those sorts of things, right? It is very much rat racy right now.
Right.
And if I could help my girls to avoid that type of situation where they can be, where they're disillusioned with society, that'd be great. Yeah. And my hope is that growing up in a more, semi-rural environment, they're going to have an appreciation for the simplicity of things and self-sufficiency and that sort of stuff, getting out in nature, fishing, hunting with me, that those sorts of things, hiking, appreciating the landscape, growing their own food, those sorts of things that maybe they will become less disillusioned and less of the belief that our world is on a crash course into just complete oblivion as we overconsume every possible natural resource.
From a hunting or, you're not living in, you're not considering living in a place that has all of that right outside the back door, though, right? There is some type of commuting involved regardless to be able to do hunting or fishing or whatever.
Much less than here. Much, much less.
Granted, but there's still some at least, right? I think by and large, just back to the schooling aspect more so.
Sure.
I think by and large, rural places, you sacrifice a lot of opportunities from schooling perspective. I would say that there are far less private schools if you're looking at doing that, right? By and large, I mean, I'm sure there are places out there that have, some of the places that you're looking at, as you know, have some private schools. But they're probably not in the town, though. Again, it's more closer to a city center, and you just happen to have driving ability to there, as an example, right? So like if you're actually in a remote, more actually truly rural town and not a feeder sort of zone, you don't really have access to a whole bunch of facilities in that regard. It's like if it's a really truly small town, it's like one school potentially.
Yeah.
And that's as good as you're gonna get.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yes, I would say generally you're probably very correct. The community that we're looking at has four independent schools in it. You know,
yeah, so there are out there.
A couple
sure.
of them are ranked in you know, top schools in Canada. Like it's
I'm digressing yeah, from yeah, yeah. It's talking about you specifically. I'm talking about in general.
I right? agree.
For the people that are
listening. But I think you would have an argument from a lot of people who do live in rural environments that those schools, you're not necessarily sacrificing things. You may be getting additional experiences that they wouldn't get in the city.
Yeah. I don't know. So the other part from a rural perspective, I feel like, so granted you're talking about walking and hiking and things like that. Those are activity level things. But the distance between a lot of things in rural towns, the individuals will end up driving a whole lot more.
Yes,
to different
places. Yes, the physical distance, but not the amount of time that it takes to get there.
Understood. But yeah. That to me fosters the habit of driving everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't own a car until I was 27. I lived in the city.
Yeah.
Because I biked absolutely everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And only because it was absolutely requirement for me to get a car because of just the way mm-hmm. where the office was when I had a job at this Passat. They moved offices. There was no way I could get to it by yeah. public transit or anything else. Had to get a car. It just yeah. didn't make sense. My wife, coming from a more suburban, rural area, drove everywhere.
Yeah.
Her parents still drive to our house, which is like a 7-minute yeah. walk, yeah. 10-minute walk. Yeah. And for the most part, it's a beautiful sunny day, and yet they still drive. And that's
but it's uphill on the way home.
Both ways. It's uphill both ways. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And how did they get to that point? I think mm-hmm. because they're just used to it and sort of the old dog's new trick type
sure.
stuff. They
yeah.
just don't do it. And my wife is she's getting a lot better in terms of, I think through my influence mm-hmm. about, no, we don't have to drive this, or we can walk, or we can do something else. And that part I don't like, is the fostering that, yeah, you're going to drive. Even I always laugh, people going to the gym, right? The gym will be 15 or 20 minutes away and they'll get in the car to drive to the gym, to run on a treadmill, and then get in the car to drive back home. Like, why don't you just jog down? Jog on the treadmill and then jog back to me. It's baffling why someone would drive to an area to exercise.
Well, there's nobody potentially staring at them on as they run to the gym, whereas they may, you know, be able to meet somebody or impress somebody when they're jogging at the gym.
I'm not saying not go to the gym.
No, I understand.
I'm saying bike to the goddamn gym or something or other. I'm sorry, this might be controversial to people who are going to gyms, but just think about it. Consider the bizarre nature of getting in a car to drive somewhere to exercise, right? If it's raining or something, you know, natural consequences out there, snow, hail, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's some rationale there, but beautiful days, that grinds my gears.
Yeah.
That one gets me for sure. It's it is not simpatico. It doesn't work. I guess safety as well. That's a big one. Sort of, you already touched on that as well.
Yeah. I think that depends on the community that you're moving into for sure. Like there's some communities that we looked at over the weekend and we both shook our head and said, no, this isn't the right place. This wouldn't be a safe place. But I think if you choose the right community, it can be incredibly safe.
Right.
The community pitches in and supports each other and kind of protects each other.
Interesting. Just more on the data side, car accidents, leading causes of death for young people, which is an interesting point, just talking in general about, if you're truly in a city, right, where there is access to public transit and other means, you could argue that it's actually safer in a city if the leading cause is car accidents, and in a city where it does, like New York, okay?
Sure.
People are not buying and owning cars a whole bunch in New York just because of the overall nature. So using that as an example, people are driving, or maybe getting into cabs, or likely using public transit, etc. So same with younger individuals, especially because they're a whole lot worse at driving than not.
Yeah.
They're saving themselves a lot of accidents and deaths potentially by having that. Whereas in a rural area, again, car accidents, now you could argue he's rural, not as many cars around, maybe not as a chance of death there. I don't know that type of data, but it is interesting.
Well, yeah, and given,
maybe it's more a suburban, the suburban versus the city zone. If the leading cause is traffic.
Well, and given that you and I lost friends in university due to a car accident in a suburban environment, I mean, that particularly hits home.
Exactly.
But I think in the city, you're also more likely to get hit by a car, right? As a pedestrian, you know, given...
I don't know that I...
had a colleague of mine, daughter running, you know, jogging and gets hit and run crossing a crosswalk in the city.
Right? Now I'm going to go ahead and say that our city in particular, people, pedestrians just have some internal belief that it's their God-given right to be able to do whatever they want as a pedestrian.
Yes.
So I don't know the particular story about the running, but I feel like people just, oh, it's a crosswalk, I can just cross and cars will stop for me.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is. Yes, and for the most part, that is true.
I don't believe that was the case in this situation, but yes, I will agree with you that our city in particular has pedestrians for some reason seem to think that they are just invincible.
Yes.
As long as they're in a crosswalk, they believe that they are completely invincible.
The little man flashes go, and that means that they can just start stepping. No worries about anything like that. And that always terrifies me to see how some people... I've stopped some people because a car is turning right or something like that and not slowing down and someone's about to walk off. Yeah. And I go, well, and they obviously appreciate that they didn't get absolutely smashed or like blown off or something. It's...
But I would say that things like property crime and violent crime, those sorts of things are less likely in the more rural environment, right? You're significantly more likely to have that in the city. Drug addiction, that kind of stuff. I mean, you could probably argue that alcoholism exists at the same rate, if not higher, out in the country, but...
I think that's another thing that I'll get into from a data perspective.
Yeah,
for sure. Why not?
But the exposure to drugs, in particular opiates. I mean, that's
way more in there's rural areas. There's a reason
that Vancouver has, you know, some of the highest opiate death rates in North America.
I feel like a la carte options available in a more city area are potentially there, but hard drugs and are probably everywhere. And I would think that, in rural areas, there's nothing to do, and drug use and alcohol use and things like that are just widely used a whole lot more in general.
I would say probably pot. Yeah. But I would doubt that you're going to find party drugs like cocaine and stuff being as widely used there as you would in the city.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't tell you that or not. I feel like the opposite. I feel like there is a...
Yeah.
There is excess anywhere. And if you're bored...
How about I give you a couple of my biggest fears of this move? And then you confirm with data or not whether they're justified.
With the data that I have, we'll see. Yes, let's go. Let's do it.
Okay.
Let's play that game.
Teenage pregnancy.
Higher in rural areas.
Yeah, that scares me.
Yeah, right? So here's a data. This is from Maclean's, a Canadian news article, pretty established, reputable thing. And there is actually a long-standing study within Canada.
Yeah.
And so when it comes to sex, 60% of 15 to 19-year-olds from communities with people less than 10,000 people in it admit to being active relating to sex, whereas 49% in the country's largest 400,000-plus people centers. So what is that? For call it 50 to 60%. So that's 20% more.
Yeah.
If that math is right. Just a little bit more than 21% more of individuals are having sex more frequently. Mm-hmm. 15 to 19. And then...
But, I mean, that's sexual activity. That's not necessarily, you know, pregnancy.
Okay. what is it here? I think there is some data about that somewhere.
I mean, maybe I'm new age dad or whatever, but I'm not gonna get all over my kids for being sexually active, given that I know that I was at that age.
Right.
Right.
I'm not gonna have
unreasonable expectations and say, you know, you have to wait for marriage. Like it's just, that's not the way the world works anymore. I mean, it would be great if it did, but it's just not realistic. I just want them to protect themselves and make sure that they're, you know, not going to wind up with a decision that's going to.
Yeah. Now this is more survey. There's no actual data there, but people in rural towns express more support for having kids out of wedlock.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So take that with what you will, whether that means that more teen pregnancies, et cetera.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know that part. Who knows? Interesting as well, just from an attitude perspective. So, okay, we're still playing the game. Go ahead.
Okay. Next would probably be like access to firearms that haven't been properly taken care of, right?
Yeah, that's somewhere here. That is up there as well. So youth from smaller communities, they actually have place less importance on honesty and concern for others. And
see, I would have thought that would be the other way around. I really would have. I would have thought that small town people.
Yeah. So here it is. Okay. Sorry. Just back to your point. Yeah. Research shows that rural youth are more likely to abuse alcohol and other substances.
Okay.
Have unprotected sex and have access to firearms.
Okay. Those are all disconcerting.
I'm very interested to know what that, just to our point before about other drugs, like what other substances.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like just one weed as an example. It's like other substances. More likely to abuse, actually, that's the point, abuse alcohol and other substances too. So it's not just try, it's actually abuse it. So, and access to firearms. So that is a pretty damning report if you're actually more likely to have all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So this Dr. Miriam Kaufman says, people move to rural areas because it's a place to raise their children. And that is very well true. But once you hit adolescence, there's not much to do in smaller centers beyond drink and have sex.
Mm-hmm.
That's her overall review of things.
Yeah. Unless as a parent, you do everything to keep them busy.
Chastity belts?
No. Responsibilities and activities, right? I think that if you're able to motivate your kids towards other things.
I think that goes with any
environment,
right?
Yes. Like, yeah, I agree.
You put kids in sports so they have, all they're doing is nothing but sports. They don't have time to be able to go and do all that sort of stuff, for sure. But by and large, I mean, maybe, who knows, right? Does the rural zone, the slower living, et cetera, the thought of putting in a whole bunch of social activities and all the things, does that wane over time?
Yeah, I don't necessarily mean social activities. I mean, it could be responsibilities around the property, right? You know, care for animals or whatever it may be. Activities that involve those sorts of things, hiking or getting them out fishing with me, or caring for chickens and getting involved in 4-H or whatever it may be.
Which, I mean, yes, that all sounds great in theory.
Right.
I still, like, responsibilities and big yards and things like that, to me, just a lot of times think big problems. Right. And other things that go on, and as a society or parents overall, we're busy enough.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Just separately, what I found as well. What do you think is the best country overall to raise children?
Best country to raise children. Well, I mean, given that we read the book, the Danish way of parenting, I'm going to go Denmark.
There's foreshadowing there. Exactly. Yeah. That is right. Denmark is number one overall. That's 2021. I think they've maintained that spot for at least 1 or 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a whole lot of the European countries leading the charge.
Yeah.
Denmark, number one, Sweden, Norway, Netherlands, then Canada.
Okay.
So Canada's number five. Australia is number 9, Germany's 13, UK's 14.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think the United States is?
Oh, down in the 60s or 70s.
They're not that bad.
Okay.
22.
Okay.
Not bad.
Yeah.
It was certainly better than what you were rating.
Yeah.
What's your opinion there? I was thinking
education, healthcare, you know, there's
I don't want to blast it, but I mean, it seemed like the way I was setting it up was more like, but 22 versus overall. I don't believe from the overall country perspective, I think the United States is higher. But this is just relating to parenting specifically,
right?
Raising kids. Canada is, I think, number one in places to live overall.
Mm-hmm.
And the United States, I think, as I remember, is maybe number 6 or something in that zone. But anyways, it's just very interesting that Denmark, the Danish way of parenting, I find that hilarious. Now, they tax the crap out of you. And they put a whole lot of finances into raising kids. Like, you don't have to pay to go to university. And there's a whole bunch of things that they do with that money overall. But people are happy to pay it because it seems...
they're receiving the services.
Yeah. Exactly. And they're actually seeing they're putting money towards something that they actually believe in, et cetera. And is being used, I think, overall effectively now.
Yeah.
From our opinion, of course. Yeah, it's interesting. Just overall as well, just a cost perspective, it's interesting. There are some efficiencies of being in the city as well.
Agreed. There's definitely, anytime you have that increased competition, there's going to be certain things that are reduced cost.
Exactly. Yeah. When a city doubles in size, it actually gets a 20% increase in the number of products available as mm-hmm. well.
I wonder how much that's changing though with online access to goods.
Yeah, I wonder. Do you get Prime in rural zones?
I would imagine it depends on where you are, but I think most places that's probably yes now.
Rural spots as well, as again to the extreme of city living as well. Take it, for instance, a condominium or shared housing type spot. Living in a rural zone, you open yourself up to a whole lot more problems, potential problems of natural consequences. Like if you have a septic field, right? Dealing with that backups, or a tree falling down onto your roof potentially, or roots creeping in somewhere, or your horse having some type of issue. I don't know.
I would argue that living in the city in a condo, as an example, you have the same potential risks, but it's mostly driven by the stupidity of people. right? Like, well, your neighbor upstairs leaving their water on, flooding, yeah, and then flooding your place. You know, a special assessment on a leaky condo that wasn't rain screened properly receiving a $100,000 bill. I think it's just different problems.
So where does that leave us overall? I mean, it seems like it's really dependent on the individual and the kids.
Okay, so here's how I'm going to put it. I think that living in the city is... Living in the country, sorry, is more idealistic, and it's... what's the right word? Individuals that really want to be able to make their own decisions and not have to rely on society.
Okay.
It's for people who want to be able to do things for themselves. Yeah. It's people that are driven by that, mm-hmm, by being able to do stuff for themselves, right? Whereas living in the city, you are sacrificing money for somebody else to do something for you.
But how does it relate towards kids wise?
I think when you are more self-sufficient, you have a greater sense of self-confidence. And that is the hope of what we're going to achieve for our girls, is a reduced level of anxiety and an increased level of self-confidence because of an increased level of self-sufficiency.
Right. Assuming they're not bored and do drugs.
Assuming they're not bored doing drugs, drinking, and getting pregnant.
Hey, as we know, you get pregnant and have a kid. Boy, there's a lot to do there.
That is the ultimate thing in teaching self-sufficiency.
So let's end it with that, everyone. If you want to keep your... I can't even finish it. Get your kid pregnant.
Yeah, or don't do that. Thank you. Graham, thanks for asking the questions on this one and for providing the data as to why I should or should not make this decision. Thank you for everybody listening. Make sure, please do us a favor. Go and hit that subscribe button. It helps a huge amount. It will make sure that the next episode automatically downloads. It really helps our numbers to try and push this out and get us up the Apple charts. If you've got a couple minutes, go and leave us a quick review. A written one is best. We really appreciate it. Thanks so much, and we will see you on the next episode.
Have a good one, everyone.